Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Well, good morning, Shasta County. That was Billy Joel, My Life. This is Kevin Cry, and this is my show. I'm broadcasting live from District 1 in downtown Reading here on Market Street, KCNR, Your Talk Radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. It's going to be a scorcher today with a high of 109, hot all next week with highs around 105, give or take through Thursday before we cook back down to the 90s on Friday. Also looking at a chance for showers and thunderstorms in the mountains and valley Monday. And you can always get the latest forecast from Mike Kruger at weathernorcal.com. You can also download the Weather NorCal app on your iPhone or Android. Also, there is a 24-hour streaming channel on YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire Stick, and Apple TV will be available soon. Man, I missed everybody the last couple weeks. It's been absolutely crazy. Feels like I was just here yesterday doing 2 weeks ago's Sunday show. We have a lot to cover today and a few guests rolling in and out. Today's show is going to feel a little like a shootout, like a high-scoring game, with the last few minutes being very methodical and tactical. Topics we're going to cover: homelessness, jail, and public safety. We are going to have Amy Young back on to give an update of the status of AB 969, and we're going to cover past and upcoming board meetings. We have one this Tuesday, including some more about the Zog Fire process and the letter we're looking to send to the Attorney General. One last item before we get to our first guest. Stephen Schuster, who's a friend of mine and girls basketball coach at UPrep High School here in Reading, has taken his varsity team every couple years for the last 10 years over to Lahaina to play Lahaina High School. And his teams have developed strong relationships with those families. And he did a Facebook post last night asking just people in general to consider making a donation to Lahaina High School. And I'm going to put that information on my website. I'll say it quickly here. But you can send – because one thing about athletics is we all know kids can't choose their parents. A lot of times kids can't choose their surroundings. And something like a natural disaster, a fire like that, which has hit very close to home for all of us here in Shasta County on multiple levels over the past few years. And then I do have some listeners in the Paradise Chico area, so the campfire, obviously, down there. And sports is the one constant a lot of kids rally around. And losing that and losing those relationships and the friendships, and, of course, everybody across the country experienced that with COVID. My daughter was one of them. And so I think doing something, if you feel moved to do so, you could send a donation to Jonathan Conrad. And that is 980 Lahaina Road in Lahaina, Hawaii, 96761. Or you can get in touch with Coach Stephen Schuster at UPrep. And that's 2200 Eureka Way, Redding, California, 96001. And again, I'll have that information on my website here probably by the end of the day. All right, jump into our first guest. I have a couple friends, one new friend and one old friend. Not old in terms of her age, but old in terms of I've known her now a little over a year and a half, but that's Monique Willeen. Good morning, Monique.
Good morning, Kevin.
And I have her friend Charity here, who's actually the owner of Reading Florist. And so good morning, Charity.
Good morning.
So we got connected this week. Mo was telling me a story that she had heard from Charity. And how long have you guys known each other, Mo?
Our sons have been playing football together for the last 2 years, so probably 2 years.
A couple years, great. Yeah. And so Mo reached out to me and said, hey, because if you know, or if you get it, if you're one of the people that still subscribe to the Record Searchlight or you have a friend that lines their hamster cage with it, there was an article about a young man or an individual named Tristan who is a Reading resident. He's been in and out of jail. But he is somebody many of us have probably seen at the corner of Cypress and Hilltop or maybe on Lake Boulevard. He has severe mental health issues. And one thing this past year, as I've been out at Martin Luther King Park and kind of really just taken a really deep dive into the state of mental health, public safety, homelessness, mostly just in Shasta County. I have made some connections outside the area just to see what other cities, counties, states, et cetera, are doing and what's working and what's not. It was interesting to see the article, and one thing Mo had told me is that the story from Charity and an interaction she had with Tristan years ago. So, Charity, could you tell us a little bit the story that you told Mo, and then Mo said I had to hear it, and so here we are.
Yes. So I've lived here for 22 years, and about 9 years ago, I had worked at Black Bear Diner, had for many years, became the nighttime shift supervisor. And when you close, you leave late, 1 o'clock in the morning. Tristan, I asked questions about him all the time. You know, you see him through those big windows, shaking, yelling. And a few people that I work with had went to school with him locally. I mean, he's 36 years old, so he's my age. He doesn't look like it. So what's his deal, you know? One of my friends said he was normal in high school. He was a kid that had to go to the office. So he said we knew he was on medication. And now he's like this. And so I was 8 months pregnant with my daughter, who's 9 now. And I was going to close up, set the alarm. My dishwasher and me were walking out together. And Tristan comes screaming and yelling across the 99-cent store parking lot towards Black Bear Diner. So I'm hearing him, and so I don't unlock the door. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, what's going on, Tristan? And all of a sudden, a man was crouched behind the door and jumps up with a knife and runs off the patio of Black Bear Diner. So I'm freaking out. I call the cops. My dishwasher goes outside. Tristan said he was going to rob you. Tristan talks completely normal. It was very verbal. And he just turned around and walked away.
Wow. That's a great story. So, and the reason I wanted to have Charity come on and tell that story a little bit is one thing. And again, I was very clear during my campaign of how I felt about people breaking the law, that we need more jail beds, more staff, and just incarcerate people or make it miserable for them to be in Shasta County and run amok. And either they're going to be in jail or they got to move because we have to be a community that just says we're just not going to put up with this. The state can do what they want. One thing, though, I will say where my heart has changed a little bit is, for an example, and I've only spoken to Tristan maybe a couple times at the corner of Hilltop and Cypress. I mean, he wouldn't know me at all. But I do know people with mental illness like Tristan do not belong in jail. We need a humane dual diagnosis inpatient facility here. The state has not made a lot of this any easier with AB 109, 57, 47, et cetera. But we can't outsource this constantly to the ER where people are going there and it's overloaded and wait times are long. So this ties in a little bit with this Tuesday. Sheriff Johnson's going to be bringing a proposal to the Board of Supervisors about opening the third floor. And how does this relate to Tristan? I think what definitely has to do is we have to understand that it is not humane for individuals like Tristan to be on the streets, and if he's breaking the law and breaking into things, yeah, then he needs to be in jail. But the reality is he has such mental health issues that he doesn't. I mean, he has no idea what he's even doing. And I do love the fact that you had shared that story with Mo, because I think more people need to put a story and a face to some of the things that some of the individuals in our community deal with daily. And it's not good. Is there anything else that you'd like to add just about that experience and how that's changed maybe your outlook with people you see on the streets?
So I definitely was a face treasure with Tristan. He scared me. He scared me a lot. When we walk outside to smoke cigarettes, he's never violent. He's please and thank you. There is a beautiful human behind him. And I could have been in the same situation if I would have if I would have gotten robbed and stabbed and lost my child, I could have been the same in the same situation Tristan was, because I know that I wouldn't be able to mentally take it, and there's nowhere for anyone to go.
Yeah, and I've heard, and again, it's tough because I can't have anybody substantiate this, so I'll say this without having the I haven't been able to follow up and ask this, and this has been something I've been trying to run down about the last 6 weeks. But from what I understand, Tristan in high school or shortly thereafter, there was a large house fire, and a lot of his family were burned in that, and they had pulled individuals out and laid them on the lawn. So when he comes home from the store, he sees family members who had burned in the fire, and it was traumatic. And again, so. Again, and I don't want to again really come across that that I am not for law and order, because Tristan's example or situation, albeit extremely sad, is not every single one of them. There are a lot of people on our streets that just are absolutely nefarious, up to no good. They choose a lifestyle to basically terrorize, steal, and camp illegally on people's property, and that's not okay. And that's what I'm excited about Tuesday and Sheriff Johnson's proposal. So I think having that heart of understanding there's people there that need help, we got to get them help. We got to make it easier. We've got to row in the same direction and get focused on things that actually make those changes and those differences, but also keep people very accountable. So before we go into our first break here, I just want to thank both of you, Mo and Charity, for what you do and being willing to come up and tell your story. Charity, I know it's obviously emotional. Your daughter's now 9, so what a cool life opportunity and teaching moment for you and your kids and your family with that. So thank you for coming forward. When we come back out of the break, we're going to have Amy Young from Nevada County, and we're going to talk about AB 969. We'll be right back.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
All right, we are back. This is Kevin Cry. This is my show, and I am super, super excited about my next guest. She's calling in. Amy, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. This is Amy Young from Nevada County, and she has been on before, and we discussed AB 969. And if you're not familiar with AB 969, I'll give you a little bit of a background to it. We had a vote, and I believe it was February, to do away with the Dominion contract and move towards a hand tabulation of votes. And what has happened since then has been this cascading effect. And actually, it's been an amazing civics lesson for me and for many of us that were not politically engaged, let's say, a couple years ago. Because what we've seen now is we see what happens when the supermajority of a state or a county, et cetera, really just comes crashing and crushing down and trying to take away local control. So what AB 969 is it's a bill to basically not have counties be able to assert local control in how they want their votes tabulated. So they're making it now where if a county has more than 1,000 registered voters, so as you can imagine, in the 50-plus counties in California, there's not a single one that has less than 1,000 registered voters. So they're making it basically illegal where you have to use machines. And again, machines, not machines, that's not the issue. The issue really is taking away local control. Thankfully, our assemblywoman and our senator that represent us here in the North State in Redding and Shasta County, they are opposed to this. Why they're opposed to it, I haven't talked to them personally. I believe, from what I understand, it's really about local control and it's not a voting issue. And to me, it's not really a voting issue either. It's about us being able to assert what we want. So, Amy, give us a little bit of a rundown of what you've seen, because you've been very involved. You're actually going to the Capitol this week and lobbying, because this is back on the floor, the Senate floor, for the third time, and this is supposed to be the week they take a vote on it. So just catch us up and share with us where you are in the process.
Yeah, like you said, it's coming up for a vote, possibly this week, though we're not sure exactly when. It has gone through the Appropriations Committee, the Senate Governance and Finance Committee. Interestingly enough, in the Appropriations Committee, which is where they study the fiscal impact of a bill, they used Kathy Darling Allen's estimate of she gave them an estimate of 1,300 workers will be needed to conduct a manual tally. So the cost, the additional staffing, they said would cost about $1.6 million to conduct a manual tally. So they used that estimate to justify that voting, purchasing and licensing software for voting systems, computerized voting systems, will be cheaper than doing a hand tally. So it whizzed through the Appropriations Committee with no fiscal impact determined, and it is up for a vote soon. We're not sure exactly when. So that's where we stand now.
So you went, when the Secretary of State was doing some new procedures on hand counting, I know you were down there because I was down there as well. What did you see in that process of how they were hand counting ballots, and what are some of the things that you saw in that process that bothered you?
Yeah, this related but not the same issue is the Secretary of State, in response, kind of hand in hand with this legislature doing AB 969, the Secretary of State drafted a new chapter of proposed regulations on hand counting or on a manual tally that were very cumbersome, and I don't see why they're necessary, because we already have election laws on the books that direct elections officials how to do a manual tally, and they have been doing it for years with the 1% manual tally. We were at the hearing on July 3rd. We had a good turnout from a variety of counties. One of the things that I saw that was troubling was there was not one elected official at that hearing. The Secretary of State was not there. She sent her deputy and two office employees to hear our grievances and support. There were a couple of people there in support. So that was troubling. The Secretary of State's office did take into consideration a few public comments. So that was good. They actually nixed the two-scale drawing that they were requiring of the room layout. They nixed a couple of the little ones. I think it was just kind of throwing us a bone.
Well, yeah, it almost felt like, you know, sometimes in a negotiation you'll ask for 35 things and there's really 20 that you want. So that way it looks like, okay, I conceded on these 15 points, but those 15 points were like basically if you're buying a house, you say, hey, I want those pool noodles. And say, okay, well, I won't take the pool noodles. Well, okay.
Exactly. They took the pool noodles off for us.
Yeah, exactly. So getting back to AB 969, what is your confidence level that this is not, I mean, I guess asking the question, what are the odds of this passing, do you think?
Well, I don't like to think negatively, but it should pass. They need a two-thirds vote. If all of the Republican state senators vote no, we would still need a I haven't done the exact math, but I think we need about 11 more, and I don't know the exact number, but we still need a good handful of Democrat state senators to vote against it. But hey, that's why I'm going to put my big girl pants on. I'm going to lobby for the first time at the Capitol. We're going to peacefully, make our voices heard, pass out flyers to the senators and ask them to please protect local county control over their elections and to let the people of each county decide how they want to tally their votes. Like you guys listen to your constituents up there in Shasta County and thought this is what we want to do for them. This is what we're hearing from them. Supervisors should be able to do that in every county. Like you said, this is about local control.
Yeah, and there's quite a few counties right now, supervisors that I've spoken to, that are really just watching this, and they feel like it's a foregone conclusion that 969 is going to pass. And then what I would really hope, and what I, on a lot of levels, but I would love to see 969 not pass, and then see those counties who actually have said, hey, we want to go to a hand count as well. Now they have that opportunity. So, again, for me,
yeah. And
go ahead.
No, it's just there's so many counties that really could do a manual tally. They don't need to be purchasing this expensive voting computerized voting systems. The counties that are smaller with less than, like with 30,000 voters, 20,000 voters, they could easily be doing a manual tally. There's just, based on the numbers that manual tallies require, that like Kathy Darling Allen has shown that she can have counting boards, one county board can tally 340 ballots a day. Counties could easily do this if they wanted to.
Yeah.
So it's just sad that the legislature has moved to outlaw it, basically ban even attempting to do a manual tally. It's sad.
Yeah, and again, I'm always just going to keep coming back to the fact that anytime the government in Sacramento is going to tell Shasta County what's in our best interest, that's troubling for me, because our state has definitely been in a mass decline easily the last 10, 15 years. And you look back at the supermajority of where it is, when it started, and some of these laws that have come down, and, you know, we're less safe. There are cities now that people don't even go to. Businesses are abandoning them, moving out of state. We're losing all that tax revenue, and people just shrug and say, oh, well, that's just business, or people just leave. No, that's because of the way our legislature in Sacramento is driving our county. And then when, again, this is voting, but you talk about wind farms or electric vehicles, and it just goes on. And I just wish Sacramento would take care of Sacramento and continue to let Shasta County guide the way that we want to do things. So, Amy, I really appreciate you coming on. Good luck tomorrow. So let me ask you, if people want to drive down and join you, and I know there's quite a few other counties. I know Glenn County has some people going. I know San Joaquin County has some individuals going. Those I know for sure. I'm not sure of other counties that are having a coordinated effort in terms of going down there and working together. But do you have an email or a way someone could get a hold of you if they want some more information about maybe making that trip down to Sacramento tomorrow or this week?
I don't have an email to give out on the air. Tomorrow's a big lobbying day in Sacramento, I think. There's going to be a variety of groups there. So I would just say they could join. We're going to be starting at 9 o'clock over at the on O Street, the Swing Building, and just encourage everyone to bring their positive attitudes. You know, we have to show up with a smile. We don't have to show up with anger on our faces. We can still spread the love and joy of the Lord while we try to make a difference, you know, for what we want.
Absolutely.
So if everybody can go to their state capitol and engage in lobbying. So
no, I think I think that is key. I mean, there's a lot of things we can do, and we can be peaceful about it. We can be very stern in our beliefs. We don't have to be aggressive. But again, I think just continuing to drive home the fact that these legislatures are really voting on what local control is. And in this fashion or in this vertical or example, it's elections. But anything that takes away or usurps local control from counties, I think is bad. So, Amy, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to go on a short break, and when we come back, we're going to jump into some of the information as it relates to the upcoming board meeting this Tuesday and some different things that happened this past board meeting. I do want to give one little clarification. Earlier when I talked about Stephen Schuster, the coach at UPrep, he was plugged in, he was listening, getting ready for church, and I need to make a correction. The high school is called, and I'm going to butcher this, but I'm going to give it a whirl. It's Lahaina Luna High School. So it's not just Lahaina High School, it's Lahaina Luna. So that would be the high school. The address I still gave you was correct, 980 Lahaina Luna Road, Lahaina, Hawaii, 96761. And again, that coach, it would be Attention Jonathan Conrad. Or, of course, you can reach out to Coach Stephen Schuster at UPrep. And that's on Eureka Way, 2200 Eureka Way, Redding, California. Support kids every chance you get. Support them locally, of course. And then, if, like I said, if you feel led and you want to do something for the high school over there, I think that would be awesome. So it is 8:31. After this break, we'll be right back.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
Now, Daddy didn't like trouble, but if it came along, everyone that knew him knew which side that he'd be on. He never was a hero, for this town he's shining light. But you could always find him standing up for what he thought was right. He'd say, you've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything.
All right. We are back. Kevin Cry, my show. Time is flying by. We're already 8:32 or 32 minutes past the hour. Here in downtown Redding, KCNR, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. We are going to take some callers this last half an hour. We've had quite a few texts and some people calling in, so I wasn't originally going to take any callers, but if you want to call in, 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567, and we have a caller that called in during the break, and that is Nick. Nick, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, Kevin. I see where the county has decided to sever its ties with the continuum of care, and I'm wondering why that is, and if you realize by turning it over to the city of Redding, the progressive liberals, even though some of them claim they're Republicans, they're not. Their cure is to just keep throwing money at it, and let's get some more money and throw some more money. So I'm just wondering what the county's thoughts were behind that, and thanks for taking my call.
You bet, Nick. So the continuum of care, as Shasta County has ran it, costs us quite a bit of money and staff resource time. And Director Laura Birch and CEO Dave Rickert made the determination that it was in the county's best interest. And I have to tell you, I agree with them. All the other counties were subsidizing by our staff and actual dollars in other counties. And again, this kind of goes a little bit back to what we had just talked about with local control. I think it's really important that Shasta County, I think there's a difference, Nick, and just listeners in general. We want to be that county that is the anchor of Northern California. Like, we're someone that will step up, will go alongside people that need help. But there's a difference of charity and continuing to help for years and years on end, opposed to like a natural disaster where maybe the county leans in and helps other counties, like, you know, neighboring counties through a difficult time. And so I agree with Director Birch and CEO Rickert's assessment that it was time to get out. And I think what you're going to see over time is, I mean, I know it's a great decision, and I think it's long overdue. And so anyway, well, thanks for calling, Nick. And I know we're going to have more updates on that, not just on this show, but as a board as well. So, again, if you want to call in, 530-605-4567. And you can ask anything, honestly, because that wasn't something I had planned on discussing today, but that's fine. So what we're going to talk about now is we had the special board meeting Thursday or Friday of a week ago. And that was a discussion to talk about the Zog Fire settlement and what some next steps were. We decided as a board to bring back for discussion, which it already came back, which I was surprised. Usually when things come back, it's at least a couple meetings to give staff time. And so what's on the agenda is to approve a letter. Now, many of you probably, or maybe some of you, go online and you read the staff reports and the letter. So I'm going to read you the letter that the staff put together. And I was out of town this past week. So and I got back when staff was already gone on Friday. I got back at like 8 or 9 o'clock on Friday night. So there was not an opportunity to talk to staff. So I'll find out tomorrow morning who wrote this letter. But this is the letter that is in that the staff put together for the board to discuss about either just having Chair Jones sign it as is, or should we alter it. So I'm going to read it. It's not too long. It says Attorney General Rob Bonta has the address. It says, Dear Attorney General Bonta, we have received inquiries from concerned constituents about the prosecution of PG&E by the Shasta County District Attorney's Office. The Shasta County District Attorney's Office filed criminal charges against PG&E in 2021, but dismissed the case after entering a $50 million civil settlement with PG&E. Due to the concern expressed by some citizens of Shasta County's District 2, we request that, pursuant to your authority as Attorney General of California, you assert your authority and review both the criminal and civil cases handled by the Shasta County District Attorney's Office. The civil case is case number 202363, and criminal case is case number 21-006622. We request that you review the full prosecution of the cases by the Shasta County District Attorney, Stephanie A. Bridget, the dismissal of the criminal case, the evidence presented by your office, and the appropriateness of the civil settlement, including all distributions to charities. Sincerely, and then that is where Chair Jones would sign it. Now, on the face, that's not a bad letter, but what I will tell you is I think that is a letter. This is me personally. I haven't talked to staff. I haven't talked to Chair Jones much about it at all. It's really just I feel like that is a on a train bound to nowhere. I think there needs to be a lot more substance in there because that letter to me feels like it would go on top of a stack of papers that an intern would maybe look at in a year or two. So at the board meeting, I proposed to have a possible outside counsel, you know, with a cap of $10,000 and to look into this because what we do as a county, we outsource a ton of legal services to individuals that specialize or that have a certain area of law that they practice in. And so we use outside counsel all the time. I mean, if you look at our closed session agendas, oftentimes there's outside counsels that are listed that are coming in and consulting on different aspects of county government. So the ask that I had was really well within the means of the bounds, and I wanted to put a dollar figure on it. But here's what I didn't know in that process was that there were a lot more attorneys and law professors looking at this case than I could have ever imagined because we said we'd bring this back for discussion. But what that did was I believe It showed the seriousness that this board has about just getting answers. And again, this letter that was written by staff, and again, I haven't talked to anybody, so I don't know who wrote it, but it says in there, due to the concern expressed by some citizens of Shasta County's District 2, well, it's not just District 2. It's District 5, 4, 3. A lot of people have family in Igo. A lot of people grew up in Igo, and a lot of people understand the severity of really what this is truly about, which is holding a large corporation accountable for what they've done and not taking a payoff. So what's happened is we've had, or I've had, I can't speak to the other supervisors, and I know I can only speak to one, so I did talk to Chair Jones if he had received any emails, and he did, in fact, confirm that he has spoken to, I don't remember if I, it wasn't an email, I'd asked if he had spoken to any attorneys that have reached out to him, and he said yes, he had had a couple. So I've had no less than three that I've spoken with. That's not even some of the ones I haven't reached back out to that have said, hey, we will lean in and give you free advice or free help or free assessment of the transcripts, etc. So I've actually sent some of that out because a lot of the work for these attorneys is collecting thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of court transcripts and appeals and 995 motions, etc., to be able to actually assess everything that's transpired. So in this, I've started to write my own letter with help, and I'm going to read a little bit of this letter, and it will be available. I'm sure it'll be a public records request item if I submit it, to the board for possible adoption and signing, and having Chair Jones sign it and send it off to Attorney General Bonta. So here's the one that I'm going to propose on Tuesday. And again, I'm going to it's right now it's three pages. I'm not going to read the entire thing, but I'll get the first page and a half, because I think this has to be really, really clearly laid out where a person or Attorney General Bonta can get it, look at it, and then here it is. Boom, 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 boom. There is no having to research it other than looking through all of the case files and subsequent documentation or all the sites that I will attach to this letter. So it's going to be a pretty thick email and then physical letter, because we're going to provide all the documentation necessary. So here it is. Dear Attorney General Bonta, pursuant to Government Code Sections 12500 and 12553, we request the assistance of your office and of special counsel to review and consider the recently settled matter of People versus PG&E Corporation, Shasta County Superior Court Case Number 21-006622, in parentheses, Zogfire case. The Zogfire case involved PG&E's conduct in causing the Zogfire in 2020. The Zogfire case was commenced with jury trial in June of this year, but settled on the eve of trial. The settlement of all criminal counts against PG&E were dismissed. In exchange, a civil action was immediately filed and with judgment thereafter entered for $50 million. All funds from judgment were predetermined to be distributed to a variety of entities and charities, many of which suffered no loss in the Zogfire. The settlement has made for many inquiries from concerned constituents, and we are unable to provide meaningful answers. By way of brief background, the Zogfire ignited on September 27, 2020, when a gray pine fell upon distribution lines owned by PG&E. The resulting fire burned over 50,000 acres, destroyed over 200 structures, and most horrific, took four lives. Investigations by Cal Fire, the California Public Utility Commission, and the Shasta County Bureau of Investigation each revealed that in 2018, PG&E marked the subject gray pine for removal. However, for reasons currently unknown, PG&E failed to remove the subject gray pine. Finally, on September 27, 2020, the subject gray pine fell into PG&E's electrical lines and ignited, would become known as the Zog Fire. Furthermore, by order of the Honorable William Alsup, PG&E was found to have marked the gray pine in a court of competent jurisdiction. The findings were made in part by a PG&E court admission that PG&E's contractor marked the subject gray pine for removal and PG&E subsequently failed to remove it. On May 26, 2021, PG&E announced that it had reached a $12 million civil settlement with Shasta and Tehama counties for the extensive damage caused by the Zogfire. Under the civil settlement, Shasta and Tehama counties released all claims, known and unknown, against PG&E's. On July 29th, 2021, the Shasta County District Attorney's Office announced that it has determined that Pacific Gas and Electric Company is criminally liable for causing the 2020 Zog fire, which ignited on September 27th, 2020. The announcement stated that a final decision as to the nature and grade of charges has yet not been made, but that a filing decision would be made prior to the anniversary of the 2020 Zog fire. On September 24th, 2021, the Shasta County District Attorney's Office filed a criminal complaint, the complaint against Pacific Gas and Electric Company, the utility, related to the 2020 Zog fire, the 2020 Daniel fire, the 2020 Ponder fire, and the 2021 Woody fire. The complaint charges the utility with 11 felonies and 20 misdemeanors, including 4 felony counts of involuntary manslaughter. On May 31st, 2023, Pacific Gas and Electric Company and the Shasta County District Attorney's Office reached an agreement pursuant to which they will file a civil stipulated judgment for the Shasta DA to dismiss with prejudice all criminal charges against the utility in connection with the 2020 Zog fire. Subject to the terms and conditions of the Zog stipulation, the utility will pay a total of $50 million, which will not be recoverable through rates. And again, so, okay, I'll read this last part as well. At a May 31st, 2023 press conference, Shasta District Attorney Stephanie Bridget announced the following. However, recently PG&E fought against that ruling, and we have a different judge who was assigned to review that and has issued a written tentative ruling that would prevent us from taking this case to a criminal trial and holding them criminally responsible. This decision has severely limited our abilities to accomplish the goal that we wanted through criminal prosecution. Okay, and there's about a page and a half left. So here is the part, and I've bolded this part of the letter because this is the part for me that it really, you know, my ears kind of perked up when I watched the press conference. And again, this all comes back to a gentleman named Brian Collier, who I believe owned the IGO Inn. And he came up in public comment and just made basically a plea to the board and say, hey, please look into this. And he was coming more from the standpoint of look into the charities that got this money. To me, it didn't really, I mean, Children's Legacy Center, Bella Vista Farms, all the fire departments, volunteer or civil or county or city, Anderson, Shasta Lake, Redding, fire departments or police departments, any of those organizations that received money, Haven Humane Society and others, that was never the issue for me. The issue has always been, why were they not held criminally liable? And so when I watched the press conference and I saw that, and this is a quote, that would prevent us from taking this case to a criminal trial. So what I know is they could have refiled. So when I met with DA Stephanie Bridget and we spoke about it, it wasn't that it prevented. It just she made, and this is her right to do so, she made the decision that it was better to settle and put it behind us and move forward. And in the weeks that have followed, more and more people have actually come forward, have wanted to have meetings. I am going to have some this week with victims and victims' families that have reached out and said, hey, we would like to sit down with you and talk to you a little bit. So I definitely, the next time I have my radio show in a couple weeks, I'll be talking about what those meetings have consisted of, because for me, like many of you, I just want answers that we didn't, as a community, sell out, not going after somebody criminally because we got $50 million. And if this was truly botched, and it's like, hey, it is what it is. District Attorney's Office screwed up. They could have done a better job, but it's all on the up and up. Fine, that's great. I'm not an attorney. Too many people have come forward saying they want it looked into. And now there's many attorneys that have given me paperwork to say, okay, this definitely needs to be looked at by somebody that, from a law perspective, can really dig into it, because this isn't a witch hunt. This is just wanting answers for constituents. And that's the one thing that when we come back after this next break, I'll talk a little bit about with, as supervisors, you know, what we give our time to. And I think there's a much broader question just in life in general of, you know, what we give our time to and what's important to us, and standing up for people and people that don't have voices. That's what's always been really important to me. And if you would have told me 2 years ago or a year and a half ago that the Zog fire would be something I'd be looking into, or the settlement so heavily, I would have said, what? Like, not even believing or even understanding how that would unpack. But now, with the amount of people that have reached out, you just can't look away. So we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back, and we'll finish up with some other news.
And now the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
We are back. So here's what here's also some things that have been really interesting to me, just in when you talk about PG&E's culpability, what they knew, what they pretend to not know, etc. And you know, with it being tax season for corporations, etc. August 15th, I had some conversations with just people that do investments and my own accountant. And, of course, a lot of people I do business with, I've known for years. So they'll always say, hey, how's it going? You still thankful you ran and you're a supervisor. And so we always talk on a very personal level about stuff. But what's interesting is when you talk to people from different walks of life, they'll give you a very different perspective of something you're dealing with currently that you'd never really thought of. Like, I'll give you an example. One of the best things I got from a friend of mine, Coach Todd Franklin, he would invite like the English teacher or the math teacher who had no background in basketball. And this, we had this conversation literally 20, 25 years ago. And he said he would invite people in who had no idea about basketball at all and have them critique his practice. And it was really interesting because he had said some of the things that he gleaned from those opportunities were things that really foundationally changed some of the ways that he did his practices. So I get that, because when you have eyes look at a situation that aren't jaded or that aren't they don't have a lot of bias in a situation, it's great. It's a whole different perspective. So I was talking to a person that does some investments, and they asked if I knew what a Form 8K was. And I said, no. I said, did I forget to fill it out? And they said, no. They said a Form 8K is something that publicly traded companies have to submit documentation within 5 days for the Securities and Exchange Commission if something happens that their shareholders need to know about it. So I said, oh, that's interesting. So we started talking about the Zog fire, because this is where this came up. So I started looking into what that was, and it's the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. So if you go to the PG&E and you Google this, there is a report on October 9th of 2020 that says, and I highlighted part of this, but it says wildfire camera and satellite data on September 27th, 2020 or 2020 show smoke, heat, or signs of fire in that area between approximately 2:43 p.m. and 2:46 p.m. And then you scroll down a little farther, and it says on October 9th, 2020, Cal Fire informed PG&E that they had taken possession of PG&E equipment as part of Cal Fire's ongoing investigation into the Zog fire. So this is the very first time that I found that PG&E put something in a Form 8K that said, hey, we need to let our shareholders or our stockholders know that there's something going on with this Zog fire, and we have to let our shareholders know, because Cal Fire obviously took some of their equipment. So then you look at December 11th, 2020. And I'm going down to the third paragraph, and it says in here, the $275 million expected charge does not include, among other things, any amount for potential penalties or fines that may be imposed by the government entities on PG&E Corporation or the utility, any punitive damage, any amounts in respect compensation claims by federal, state, county, and local government entities or agencies other than the state fire suppression costs or any amounts that are not reasonably estimatable. So that's December 11th. So you can go, and there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's roughly 6 or 7 of these that I found, and you could go through more because there are others that don't even involve the Zog fire. But you start to see this lineage or this timeline of basically they're letting their stockholders know, like, hey, this happened. Hey, this doesn't look good. Hey. This is really not looking good. Hey, this is bad. And so I'll read you this one. It says right here, it says July 29, 2021, the Shasta County District Attorney's Office announced that it's determined that Pacific Gas and Electric Company is criminally liable for causing the Zog fire. And it goes on and on. So Shasta County actually has a lot of shots across the bow as well in this, basically asserting, like, hey, we know you're guilty. And, you're going to pay for it. And I champion that. I champion accountability. I champion people standing up for people that have been wronged, especially when they don't have a voice. I mean, as many of you know, a lot of times people would love to sue somebody civilly because they've been wronged. But the person, let's say, that is owing somebody money, they know that this small mom-and-pop shop doesn't have the money to fight them in court, so they just write it off and let it go. And that's the kind of bullying stuff that happens in business all the time. And but when you see it on a level such as this, I just want righteousness put forward, that if people are supposed to be responsible, they're held responsible. And if everything is on the up and up and everything was copacetic and done correctly, then I'll be the first to say, hey, well done, good job. There was nothing there. But that's what we're elected to do. We are elected to be the voice of the people. We're a voice. We're elected to listen to constituents' concerns. And even when we don't agree with them, there's a lot of things that have come before that I've run down that aren't as – I'm doing air quotes and you can't see them – but that aren't as sexy or as cool as maybe some of the things that actually make it into the board chambers. But there's a lot of things that I have run down that I necessarily don't even agree with. But it's still the people's right, especially in people in District 1 that have concerns that have brought them to me and said, hey, I'll check it out. So I'm going to give another quick little update here on the recall process of Gateway. I read recently when I got back from my trip that the Gateway recall was abandoned. And so congratulations to Lindsay and Elias Haynes and all of their supporters that recall is over. And I know on a future show I'm going to have I think his name's Casey Bowden or Casey Bowden, who's running for that Gateway seat, as well as Camille King. I'd like to have both of them on, maybe even on the next show, much like I had candidates Baron Browning and candidate Chris Kellstrom, who's now Supervisor Kellstrom. I had both them onto my radio show back in October, and that was, I think, a great thing to bring two candidates in, talk about their issues, talk about what was important to them, and give the community a chance to, hear them both side by side in that format. So if you know Camille or Casey or anybody else that's running for that seat, please have them reach out to me, because I'd love to have them both on, if not this next in 2 Sundays, maybe in a month. Lastly, the recall to try and unseat me. Couldn't tell you where they are. I really don't actually spend a lot of time thinking or caring about what they do, but I know that deadline is approaching. I know we're winning. I know steam is dying out, and I think the show of we had a fundraiser a week ago, and the sheer number of people was it was humbling. There was so many people that had never even been to a fundraiser. I asked everyone to raise their hand if they'd never been to a fundraiser of this type, and about 50 to 75 people raised their hand, which is a pretty powerful thing, because a lot of times you go to these fundraisers, and it's a lot of the same people. But there was, easily 50 to 75. And then there was a couple tables from out of the area that they wound up not coming because one had car problems and the other one had another engagement. So that number probably could have pushed close to 100. So we're getting a lot of support. I'm thankful for all of you that continue to make sure you're educating people to know what the recall group is truly about. You can see them. The people that are dropping F-bombs in the meetings are all recall people. They're angry. They're irritable. And they're not used to not getting their way. And they're going to lose twice. They lost when their candidate lost at the ballot box, and they're going to lose this recall as well.